You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? Well, then listen to What We Spend, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Donnie Chedrick with you tonight until 10:35. Charlie Borges is with me behind the glass. Going to need to email one of our tech guys, Charlie. And I'm going to also have to ask Adam Crowley, Joe Starkey, Andrew Filippone, who all sat in this seat today. It's either my headphones or the jack that we all use here. I've just been getting a horrible humming sound like the entire show. And it might need to...
You can try mine in the next segment.
I could do that, yeah. Or I might need to hop across the table here to the other chair. If this continues, see how it sounds over there. Just distracting. 412-928-9370 to join the conversation. But on the fan hotline right now is the man who is covering the Red Hot Buccos, winners of six in a row. They are doing historic things that have not been done in a century. And that man is Noah Hiles from the Post-Gazette, the now famous, very, very famous Noah Hiles, because he tweeted about Paul Skene's cutting grass. Noah, how has the fame treated you so far? We have Big Cat retweeting things with you involved. We have like every single betting application on social media putting your tweets up there about Paul Skene's cutting grass. How does it feel to be on top of the mountain?
It's nice. You know, when I remember when I graduated from Mount Union with my communications degree, and my professors asked me, they said, you know, what do you hope to achieve in life? Was it winning a Pulitzer Prize? Is it covering a team that goes on to win the World Series? And I said, actually, no. I want to cover the best pitcher in baseball, and I want to take a picture of him talking to the grounds crew before his start. And then I'm going to follow up with a quote, not even a quote, a paraphrase answer about how he wants to cut grass when he's done playing baseball. That's the career goal I had. I've met that goal. So it's really all gravy from here on out, Donnie.
So what, is he like Forrest Gump or what? Like at the end of the movie when he said he just cut Alabama's grass for free?
There are a lot of similarities there. I mean, both of those guys, SEC athletes, military men, love the blonde girl, both friends with Gary Sinise, Lieutenant Dan, Paul donates to his charity, you know, and he cut that grass for free. Yeah, like, I mean, there are some, I think Paul has a much higher IQ than Forrest Gump, but yeah, it's easy to draw some parallels. They're just simple fellas who are really good at a lot of things.
Yeah, and Paul Skene can pitch like the wind blows.
Yeah.
Maybe he can go on like a cross-country running tour at some point. We'll see. But the Pirates as a team, one of the hottest in baseball, really with the exception of the Miami Marlins, who would have thought those were the two hottest teams in baseball as we enter the month of July. But, man, I mean, this team just comes home and they play against the big money Mets. They play against a team that has kicked their ass for 25 years, and they did the ass kicking in a historic way this week, Noah. It's been a wild six games.
Yeah. I mean, the offense has been impressive. But I mean, it's a long season. You're going to have those stretches where everybody hits at the same time. You're going to have those stretches where nobody hits at the same time. And depending on how good your team is, you get to decide on which stretch you have more of. And I think we can all kind of guess what's going to be more frequent for this team. But the pitching and the defense, in my eyes, is legitimate. Like, the starting rotation we knew was going to be good. I didn't think maybe it would be this good without Jared Jones, without Yoan Oviedo, but it has been. It's exceeded a lot of my expectations. And the bullpen, a group that I was sneaky high on in spring training, I tried to tell people, you know, hey, there's some depth here where we're not going to have any Ben Hellers on the mound. Remember that guy who came in and allowed a million runs? I tried to say, you know, like, when they had to call someone up, you're calling up a guy like Chase Shugart, like Isaac Mattson. You know, these guys, and they've come up and been great. And you look, I mean, the Caleb Ferguson signing is looking really good right now. The decision to option Bednar and get him right, I mean, he's pitching the best he's pitched in his whole career. And that's a guy who not long ago was the best reliever in baseball. So he's throwing the ball great. Dennis Santana has been electrifying. I mean, their bullpen, I would argue, is just as good, if not better, than the starting rotation, especially over the last month. I think they had the second-best bullpen in all of Major League Baseball behind the Cubs, and I don't think they were that far behind the Cubs. So the pitching is carrying it, and finally they're getting the defense that they were supposed to get. You know, they made a lot of mistakes in the early going of this season, especially in the outfield. But, I mean, the infield defense with what they have in the infield now, which was supposed to be – this was supposed to be their starting infield. It was supposed to be Horwitz, Gonzalez, IKF, and Hayes. And since they've had this unit together, it's played tremendously in the field. They've made a lot of big plays. They've saved a lot of runs. Henry Davis has been great defensively behind the plate. And the outfield's been better. Cruz, he's made some mistakes here and there, but he's been a lot better than he was in April. Tommy Pham has been an excellent defender in left field. And, I mean, Reynolds still not a great defender, but he's hitting the ball, so he makes up for it. Overall, they're just playing like the team that I think Charrington hoped they'd be when they were assembled. It's still not an amazing ball club, but, man, is it a big improvement from what we watched in April and May.
Yeah, I want to jump to the bullpen from that answer, Noah. Something that I mentioned last segment, spurring from a call, was that Don Kelly just manages the bullpen so much better than Derek Shelton did. Shelton so many times was just so set, like, okay, this guy has to pitch here, this guy has to pitch here. I think that's what Kelly has been best at, really going into game by game, thinking, I don't have to pigeonhole myself by saying, okay, Dennis Santana will throw the eighth, David Bednar will throw the ninth. I know that Bednar has, you know, gone back into that closer role, but he has been able to move some of those puzzle pieces around, and it hasn't just been, hey, this guy is set here, here, and here. I'm going to pitch what fits the situation best. And these guys, to their credit, are also making him look very good.
Yeah, and to add on to what you mentioned, Don Kelly's giving these guys a longer leash, too. I mean, how often do we see now in a game where a reliever comes back out for another inning of work? It felt like under Shelton, if a guy came in a spot where he needed to get two outs, there was, you know, maybe runners on the corners, one out. And if they got a double play ball, that was it. They only pitched to one batter, but that was the end of their outing. Where Kelly, we're seeing guys get two up, sometimes three, pitch multiple innings. He's done that with Santana. He's done that with Mattson. He's done that with Ferguson just the other day through two innings of big-time relief. I mean, he's treating all of these guys not necessarily as long relievers, but he's letting his weapons be weapons. And I think there were times last year when this team was competitive where Shelton failed to do that. And he burned through the bullpen so quickly where instead of using just three arms to cover nine innings, he ended up using five. And because you thought, okay, lesser workload keeps him fresh. But in reality, it's you keep people fresh by not playing. And you have a completely healthy guy the next day if he didn't pitch. And if you can use just two or three starters or three pitchers total in a game, that gives your entire team an advantage the next day when you have a full bullpen. And it seems like they have an almost full available bullpen every day because Don Kelly's letting these guys come in and cover multiple innings through a relief outing. He's putting them in situations that make sense, and he's trusting them to use their tools to get guys out. It's been really interesting to watch because you always kind of knew it's like they have some nasty stuff in this pen, and it never translated into consistent results, and now it is.
Noah, as we get later into this month, the pieces of the bullpen will become more and more attractive to other teams around baseball. And I know we've had this conversation, but it's really ongoing because, you know, as we keep seeing these guys pitch well, Bednar, Santana, Ferguson. Like, these are going to be guys that a lot of teams call about once we get to late July, assuming that the Pirates don't go on a historic run here and they are sellers at the deadline like we still expect them to be.
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of assets. I mean, when you're a team that has a lot of pitching, a lot of controllable pitching, I mean, how many pitchers on this roster are free agents at the end of the year? Ferguson, he might be the only one that's healthy. Right, Ferguson and Heaney. Mm-hmm. That's it. I think the rest of the guys who are on expiring deals are all hurt right now. Barucci, Meza. So, I mean, they've got some tough decisions to make because, and on one side of the coin, you can move a controllable asset like Santana or Bednar or someone with a lot of control like Mitch Keller or even a younger guy like Burroughs or Ashcraft who have a ton of control and a lot of potential. And you could use that and parlay it into something that might really address a team need, which is offense. But like Carrington said over the weekend, you have depth until you don't. And if you keep moving pitching away, I mean, you see what Quinn Priester's doing right now. The guy they got in return for Quinn Priester has not played one single game in the major leagues this year. So if you're going to make trades like that, you need to make sure you're bringing someone in who's going to contribute at the major league level. He's going to make your big team better. So they need to be really smart with how they go about it. I do think they have assets, though, that can make this club better in 2026.
Would you trust Ben Cherington to make a trade as big as Mitch Keller? Because I'm not sure I do.
I mean, I don't think they have a choice. I mean, if you don't trust him, then he should only be allowed to move expiring assets and he should be let go at the end of the year. Like, if there's not that trust, that's trust that shouldn't be able to be won back because he's had 5 years to earn that trust. And if in year six, in trade deadline number six, if he's not at a place where he can move a guy that he signed to be the highest paid pitcher in franchise history, then it's time to move on. And you can let him do the bare minimum throughout the rest of the year, and then you hand him his walking papers. But I don't get the sense that that's happening. I don't know if they – I think they haven't made a decision on Cherington's future one way or the other, which to me says that he should be able to run the franchise as he sees fit. Until you've decided that he's no longer the guy, he's got to be allowed to make the moves that he thinks need to be made. And he should be able to run the team like he's going to be back next year until you get the feeling that he's not. So I don't know if I trust it. I think he deserves that right unless Nutting knows he's not coming back next year, which I have not received a ton of indication of that being the case.
Would you trade Mitch Keller?
It would have to depend on the package. I think the team could be better off if Mitch Keller was moved before opening day of next year. But if I don't get – I would have to sit down with my front office and say, here is exactly what we need for Mitch Keller. And if that offer doesn't happen between now and July 31st, that's fine. We will go into the offseason and we have 3 or 4 months to move him over the winter. And that would be a goal. But right now, I think they have the best chance to trade Keller simply because, you know, who's out of all the teams that are selling, who has a better starting pitching asset than him? He's proven, he's consistent, he's been healthy for pretty much his whole career. He goes deep into games and he has a ton of team control. And if you're a team that's consistently contending, you're willing to take on the money left on his deal. So I think he's one of the best assets available at this deadline that's known to be available for all teams that are looking to buy. And because of that situation, the Pirates can set the market on this guy. They're the ones who can sit back and wait and say, oh, you want Mitch Keller? Make me an offer. They don't have to go to teams and say, hey, are you interested in one Mitch Keller? They can let teams come to them and then start creating a market, and they can build that market up until they get an offer that they are very confident in and pull the trigger. But if that offer never comes, you can't just trade Mitch Keller because you think, oh, we have to move him now. He can't just go to the best bid. He has to go to the bid that you know you need to get.
Talking to Noah Hiles here on 93.7 The Fan. He covers the Pirates, who are one of the hottest teams in baseball. Is there a surprising name that not many people have brought up that you think could be on the move? Like last year, I thought, you know, and I'm saying this could be somebody like one of the young pitchers. I thought that the Quinn Priester move last year, that caught me by surprise at least. Is there something like that that they could maybe have in the works?
I don't want to tip too much of my hand right now, Donnie, but this weekend I'm going to have a story running where I've been talking to at least 10 different sources all week, and I've put together a lot of notes. So people can learn more on that front there.
Oh, really holding it.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Out on me. You said this comes out when? Sunday?
This weekend. I don't know. The day, because it's a holiday, I don't know if it's going to run Friday, Saturday, Sunday, who knows. But this weekend, you'll know when it's out. You'll learn more there.
I want to jump to Henry Davis, the defensive side of his game. I thought he made a great play last night, keeping that lead at 1-0. I thought it was really a great play on both ends by Horwitz and Davis. But he really has come a long way on the defensive side of the game. You know, maybe he'll never turn into the offensive player or the number one overall prospect and pick that we were hoping for, but Davis defensively has impressed me all season. He's just taken so many strides, I feel, from a guy they started in the outfield and really had doubts that could play the position. He's been pretty good for them.
Yeah, I mean, metrically, he was a top 10 defender at his position last month per FanGraphs. And I mean, it's impressive to see. And I think it's a testament to this guy's work ethic. The moment that Andy Rodriguez went down with an injury, they basically told Henry, I'm talking in the off season heading into 2024, they said, hey, this is your position. You need to figure out how to be a big league catcher. And that's all he seemingly worked on. That off season, he became a pretty good defender. The bat struggled, obviously, but he's continued to work at that while also making progress at the plate. I mean, he's by no means a finished product as a hitter, but I think if you can't recognize the steps forward he's taken offensively, you're not paying attention. It's still not great, but it's a lot better than last year. The defense though, Donnie, yeah. I mean, this guy I think is going to play 10 years in Major League Baseball simply because of his defense. The fact that he is Paul Skenes' personal catcher is also probably going to keep him in the game a long time, regardless of how he hits. But I think he can be more than that. I think this guy can be a 2-3 war player. And if you're getting that from your everyday catcher, that means you're getting really good defense and consistent offense. The glove's there, and I don't think the bat's super far away.
How has O'Neill Cruz responded to the move down in the lineup?
I think I said this to you before. I don't think that was a slight at O'Neill or a punishment. I think it's just a strategic change, and I think it takes a little bit of pressure off him. You get pitched too differently when you're the first batter of an inning, and especially when you're the best hitter on the team and you're leading off. So I think just moving him down allows him to kind of focus on his approach a little bit more. He gets a little bit better of a look. Also, I mean, he's hitting less, where it might be more of a burden when you're slumping and you're failing 6 times a game as opposed to 5 times a game. It's a little easier to deal with, I guess. So I don't know. I think Cruz right now has less pressure of him and that pressure on him in that number 5 spot. And I think it's leading to better results.
About halfway through this season. Now Horwitz has only played 37 games, but how are you grading out? How are you feeling about the Horwitz, Luis Ortiz, and prospects trade?
I mean, that's something I think we're going to need multiple years to evaluate. One, because, I mean, Horwitz is the only guy the Pirates got, but if Kennedy or Hartle ends up being a really good pitcher for Cleveland, and you know how well that organization develops arms, that trade could look tough because, I mean, Luis Ortiz is going to be a fine pitcher at the very least. I mean, I think his ceiling is pretty high, but his floor is very high. So he's going to be a part of that rotation or that pitching staff in the major league level for years. And if they can get that, and then in addition to that, get another productive big league arm, that's going to put a lot of pressure on Spencer to equate or, you know, to equalize that value. I think Spencer's looked fine so far. I would like to see a little bit more pop in the bat, but I mean, the approach has been solid at the plate defensively. I mean, I forgot what it was like to watch a actual big league first baseman play defense, and it's nice to see it again. He and Gonzalez, I think, put together a nice, solid right side of the infield duo. I think that infield looks a lot better in 2026 or 2027 whenever Connor Griffin is the everyday shortstop and brings some legitimate power on the left side. But overall, I mean, I think Spencer's fine. I think they have a lot of bigger problems to worry about than him.
Yeah, Connor Griffin, by the way, he's now, what, the number two prospect in all of baseball?
Per Baseball America, he's number two. MLB Pipeline, he's number 13. The Noah Hyles rankings, he's somewhere between 2 and 13. Overall, I mean, this kid's really good, though. Pirates fans should be really excited. I think the sky is the limit for him, man. He's impressive.
Do you think he projects well at shortstop in the majors, or will they also try to change his position?
No, I think they want him to be a shortstop because, personally, I thought the quicker road for him to the majors was outfield. Because just from watching him in spring training, anytime he'd play with the big league club, they'd play him in center. And I watched his defense, and I remember talking to other writers, and I said, this is the best defensive outfielder they have in the org. And, you know, the major league team didn't have a lot of great outfield gloves. But, I mean, Billy Cook's a good defender. Matt Gorski can play the position well. But, I mean, Griffin looked elite at that spot. And I was skeptical as to how shortstop would look because of his size and frame. But from everything I'm hearing, he's even better defensively at that spot. And if the bat can play there, I mean, to have a true five-tool player at shortstop, how many of those guys are in the game right now? I mean, we all know who they are. Seager, Lindor, right? Correa, maybe. Like, there aren't a ton. But he could be one of them. So I think that, and Charrington expressed this over the weekend when we talked with them. They view him as a shortstop who can also play outfield. And maybe one day he might be an outfielder, but I think when he makes his big league debut, it's going to be as a shortstop.
And you think it's still at least 2 years until right now at the bare minimum before he's in a major league uniform?
No, I don't. I think this kid could be here next year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like this time next year.
That's what I wrote about in my mailbag that comes out tomorrow. I mean, it's still a little premature, Donnie, because, I mean, he's 19. He hasn't even played a game in Double-A yet. He's going to be in Double-A sometime, probably next month. I'm very interested to see how that goes because if he plays well in Double-A and ends the season just continuing this pace that he's been on all year and then goes and rips it up in spring training, I don't think it's out of the question for him to start next year in Triple-A. And, you know, Triple-A, you're only one step away. Anything could happen. You could get here pretty quickly. So is it this time exactly next year, pre-All-Star break? I'm not entirely sure, but the Pirates have been waiting for a player like this for a while, where they've been able to kind of sit back and let their arms marinate and develop because they have so much pitching depth. If they would have had a Connor Griffin in AAA over the last 2 years, they would have said, service time be damned. We need this guy in the lineup every day. And so I don't think they're going to have the same restrictions that other guys might have had in different eras of this regime when they were earlier in the rebuild or even guys who needed, you know, guardrails on their buildup. I think when this guy's ready and they feel he's ready, he's going to be here. And if it means it happens before his 21st birthday, or maybe even before his 20th birthday, then so be it. So I think he'll be here in 2026. I think that's a very realistic expectation to have. As to when in 2026, I don't know yet. But I wouldn't put it out of the cards that he's here a year from now.
Now, if it is the 2026 season, and let's say, unfortunately, they're in a similar position as to what they are now, which would be a disappointment to a lot of people. But, like, his call-up has to be a big deal. It won't be just, hey, it's September, we're going to throw, a guy or two up into the majors that haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be way more planned out.
Yeah, and I think when they build their team for next year, I think Connor Griffin's going to be a part of the plan. Like, I don't see them – I mean, they haven't signed any free agent for multiple years, but if they were to do it, I don't think it's going to be a shortstop. Like, I don't think they're – I mean, they might find someone who can temporarily play that spot for the time being, but I think when they're mapping out their team for 2026, I think Connor Griffin is going to be a part of that equation. Now, they could maybe have him as a part of that second half equation, or maybe they can map out a route where it's like, hey, we built a team good enough to get to the playoffs, and then Connor Griffin can be that shot in the arm we give it in the final couple of months. But I think they know, hey, we only need to fill 100 or less games of next year at shortstop because our future shortstop is not that far away.
Speaking of shortstop, did you happen to see during our chat who was named the starting shortstop for the American League?
The American League? No, I did not. I saw Lindor was National League.
Jacob Wilson, Jack Wilson's kid.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
Jack Wilson's kid who's hitting like 350 with the Athletics.
Yep, and who does not walk at all. The antithesis of Billy Beanball. But
that's
sick.
That's awesome. Like, I mean, he's already a better offensive player than Jack ever was.
Yeah.
Jack certainly entertained us on Web Gems every single night growing up, Noah. But that's pretty cool. The kid's first season in Major League Baseball, he's just one of the best hitters in the entire game. But yeah, he is starting for the American League at short.
I mean, that 2023 draft class is looking incredible now. You've got Wilson, you've got Skeens, Wyatt Langford's going to be a good player in Texas. I mean, Dylan Cruz still has a really high ceiling. There's some really good pitchers from that class. I mean, Max Clark is the high schooler that was in that top five pick mix. He's a top-rated prospect in the Tigers system, and we know how well they develop talent. I think there's a really good chance 10 years after that draft, we're going to be looking back at that 2023 class and think that was among one of the best draft classes in a long time.
Do you think Paul Skeens will start the All-Star game again?
I don't know. I know for a fact Paul's not thinking about that because I was talking to him yesterday before we got into his landscaping aspirations about All-Star game number 2 coming up and if he's thinking about it at all, and he's not. To no one's surprise, he's just thinking about his next outing. I think that it's still probably in baseball's best interest to have him out there, because if it's in Atlanta, if they want to go with the hometown guy, Chris Sale, that would make sense. But I mean, when you're talking about stars of the game, which is what that is, it's a showcase, it's a summer classic event. It doesn't count for anything anymore. You're going to want to play your best stars. They want Paul Skeens to face Jacob Wilson, Aaron Judge. That's what they want. That's what everyone wants. And I don't think Paul's going to turn that down if it's offered.
Noah Hiles, check out his stuff at the Post-Gazette. He covers the Pirates. Noah, I assume you're excited to watch the Big Dumper play this weekend.
Oh, dude. He is. I mean, I don't get to vote on the American League MVP, but I was talking with a source last month, and I said he's the best player in baseball right now.
He is the American League starting catcher in the All-Star game, Noah. So
he should be.
People agree. And I believe he is in the Home Run Derby, correct?
Yes, I think so.
Thank God. He's going to be like the most bet-on guy ever in that just because of his nickname.
Yep.
All right, Noah. Thank you. Have fun in Seattle. I'll talk to you Friday morning. I'm hosting the morning show.
Yes. All right. I'll look forward to it.
There we go. Noah Hiles from the Post-Gazette. A good chat there with him.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.